Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it, just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Bill, and I'm with Solutions Today. And like I said, I'm a host, Bill. And welcome, welcome, welcome. And as I kick off this program, you'll must excuse me. I'm doing a broadcast, which in a way is a good thing, because part of this process, or last program was about a tribute to a guest of mine who had passed. So we're back on track to my status of my life that I've been doing this year, as I've broken down my experiences and those I have seen out of other people who's suffering from brain injury and in my ongoing life. I keep you a date, especially since I'm actively in the dating scene and other activities. And I'm using these to expose about all parts of my life, not just that, but that's a big part of it. And what I'm doing is I'm laying out, you know, the whole reaction you would have to that as a normal person, and also have as a related to obvious TBI symptoms, both from the past, but now in a unique way, what I'm trying to do, because I always had people, you know, when they initially get injured, they'll reveal their current life. And then later on, as they talk about it, they always look at it as past, forgetting to realize, even as they develop coping strategies, that in the end, the issues are still there. It's just that we've changed how we do them, and I'll explain that. I've done it before, but I'll do it again. Because now we're at that point where I'm going to relive it. And I had been given this some thought when I didn't do the broadcast last time about some things I concluded with by events in my life and by my reactions in terms of dating. Because dating is a much more intense. There's no pressure in meeting people, very little. Or normal circumstances, you know, in casual friendships and stuff, you know, people, it's really, they don't pay much attention. When you're dealing with something like dating, it's really an exposing of yourself. That's primarily what you're doing. People, you know, if I'm dating a woman, I'm going to want to know about her. She's going to want to know about me. And there's emotions involved in that of interest, of attraction, feelings of care. Whatever sparkle you have, whether you're presenting yourself with, and all the normal insecurities anybody else has. Only with the TBI, it is different. And I'll go into some of those things and how I define the program. And if you look at the program, this one is a general thing that I came to a conclusion to. And that's why I named the program The Broken Volume Switch. And what I mean by that, it's like if you have a stereo or a car radio, a TV, sometimes the volume switch is shorted or it goes out. You know, the old ones used to be turned. You could have a knob on something and all of a sudden the volume doesn't work. Goes too low, goes too high, it's stripped. You know, somewhere with the electronic stuff, but still there's radio, there's alarm clocks, all sorts of things that have a volume switch. Even in your car, you press the button. Sometimes the button goes too high, goes too low, something's off, even when you're just pressing these buttons as opposed to turning the knob. And so when we have an injury, that's what happens. my therapist, neuropsychologist, when I first was injured, when I was first confronted by the issues and what I felt, or my perception was that I was in a boat in a stormy sea with no oar and no way to steer it. And you're just adrift because you don't have the same control or the same governors or the same volume setting on all the things that processes through your executive functioning. And I'll go to each of the categories. And in my examples of some people I know, as I've seen it in other TBI people, but more important, what I know myself. And because I'm going across my current life, I'm giving it to you as it's happening. And what I was going to bring up about this particular program is I'm speaking to you, and I wrote notes down previously because I had given this some thought, and I remembered an incident that I happened back last year when I explained it about one of my relatives, my aunt that lives in the state, was apparently going through, I had found out through speaking to one cousin or another, that she was going through heart surgery. And or some kind of procedure. And she couldn't take calls. I got that flash, and then I didn't think about it. I talked to this particular cousin. I think I acknowledged it, but I started to get anxious about that. And that's a TBI tendency. We do this. Sometimes it comes off as very positive because you'll call people who you care about 10 times. I've seen it with other TBI people. They get a little obsessive. I did too. And I just got very kind of anxious about this, partly because I've been had open-heart surgery. I've been in those hospitals. I'm quite aware of difficulties in this, and when someone can't talk, you start to race. But I didn't get precipitously bad for a long time, but it was underlining me, particularly because I don't have an immediate family anymore. And very little. I have a sister in New York, but she's in New York and she's married. But I lost essentially my whole immediate family, except for the one I have down here, which really is a distant family. And, or so it transpires into that way now, in reality. And so I spoke to one cousin, I tried to call another, I don't know, I was just, and remember, I'm kind of in my own life, so I'm thinking about this. And and what happened in that instant, I went, kind of flipped out of control. So I talked to one other cousin, got a feedback, talk to them, and then on a Thursday, and then I spoke to her husband. I kind of got the load down, and I was fine. Okay, that's what it is. Well, it didn't really stick with me. I woke up the next day, and remember, sometimes we blame these triggers on things like fatigue. It doesn't always work that way. Anyway, so all of a sudden, I just had an impulse in the morning to call my aunt, and I did. And when I called her, I got no response again. And all of a sudden, I forgot about what it said, and I started to panic. And I ended up getting very angry and flipping. What's going on? And I lost track of what I had recalled or what I spoke to the night before, and I didn't know who I was really calling. The only reason I called one particular cousin is because I spoke earlier in the week, and it was in my caller ID. And I called a couple of times, and I was already going kazoozoo. Well, they were totally, this cousin totally took this totally tremendously badly because, like I said, and this is just one example, I'm not going to belabor this one because there's far more current things that, as I thought about that in hindsight, I had to define what that was. And afterwards, I got another cousin sent me a really scathing email about my behavior, which I felt bad about because I know how bad we get. And I remember how I explained it to her, that I was venting is really all I was doing. It wasn't so much anger, but venting the fears and frustration in someone I perceived to be close to me, like I have done to numerous TBI people and counselors in the city. And they didn't define it as because it was so over the top. This is where we get into what goes awry. is that governor is shot. This happens to me in many different emotional quotients, not just in frustration. Sometimes it is anger or frustration, which can come off as hardy. And I've seen it in other TBI people. When we go off like that and you're venting, for a normal person, anybody would vent and people would just blow it off. But when I do it, it sounds like something out of a horror movie. It's so vehement. It's so volatile, like a volcano. And it's not meant that way. So as you're doing it and you have that impulse to fire and let loose, it's the volume is too high. This is how to best explain it. It would be like somebody told you at 7 o'clock in the morning to turn on the stereo so you could get your morning coffee. And all of a sudden, you turn it on and it's on full volume with speakers and you're playing some heavy metal song or something like Led Zeppelin or some bombastic band, and it screams at you. That's the effect. But the difference is, when I do it, when I'm in that emotional volume switch, I perceive the volume at some level. I'm also from New York, so we tend to be a little animated anyway in volume and intensity compared to, say, Southern people who tend to be much more genteel. I could talk to someone about ordering a bagel here and they would get offended. But anyway, so that was an example. And since I had given that thought, and I remember the first cousin that wrote me a letter about this, who tore me a new one, because she just looked at it and said, how could anybody do this to their family? Which, I'm telling you, I almost want a recording of it because I'd play it. It's so brutal. And so a therapist once described being in a conversation when I was venting out. She told me, she says, I feel like I've just been beat up. It's so extreme and comes off as volatile and rage. Sometimes it is anger, but other times it's frustration. I'll remember once when I, with my aunt, as a matter of fact, when I was first injured, I blew up. Not really, it was because what happens is when that volume switch goes and the impulses in the brains just fire out. I remember once I got frustrated because I didn't have a signature on a car I bought. And the guy gave me the title, forgot the signature. So when I went up to the window at the Kroger that had a licensing department, I ended up getting a car. I blew a stack. And I wasn't angry at anybody. It was just a frustration that accelerated. The volume switch, again, was broken. So as I thought about this, and by the way, it causes things because you have to be selective on who you can deal with in terms of people. And very often, as with the case with the family here, they don't particularly get that anymore. I had been comfort with my family and thinking that that was something they got, and apparently it's not. And it's really bad because it's a situation where a lot of TBI people have these instances in public forums. And I have maybe 10. This happens to me maybe once every 3 or 4 years. I'll do something like that. So it's really very minimal. I'm at about 90%. So I'm extremely high-functioning, and I face the world where nobody knows I have a TBI. And in the TBI world, very often all or parts of a family, that one guy I know here, his close family, understands it 100% because they grew up with it and been through all the training. And the family has another part. Some get it, some don't. They still don't. My mother initially, for years, I had to keep away from her, pray to my therapist before she died because she didn't fully understand it. And you can't blame them for this. This is something I have to explain. I've talked to other survivors. Is because you don't take them to task because I myself, before my brain injury, and even while I was learning about it, didn't understand it in other people and didn't fully conceive of it in myself because for the first 3 or 4 years, I was in denial I even had an injury. And so with training, you begin to get, when I was first, I was really like that. I was in that boat with no oar and no control, just in a raging sea. So all of these volume levels in those instances would happen. But this is the interesting thing about this. This is where I'm getting. And I'm telling you this now in a good time because I'm actually on the air while I'm very fatigued. So I'm actually giving you me exhausted. I've made notes about this, but I am toast. Not because of any sad thing. And I'll relate the emotions I'm feeling about this. I'm like highly depressed now because I've been jamming, practicing songs. I played tennis last night, which exhausts me. Not too much, but an hour and a half. But an hour and a half in hot weather, and I play competition tennis. And I also have been working because I might have a job. And I wrote a song, and I recorded it yesterday. That's another activity. I finally got a polished recording with my guy that I'm going to perform with. And I may have a job from a gig, a nonprofit I went to about 3 weeks ago. And I, at first, was daunted and wasn't even sure if I would do it. I talked to the woman, played my guitar there. There was another guitarist, and I kind of got, and then so she heard me, and I played a few of my songs, and one thing led to another. So I ended up, she's one thing, I talked to her, so she took my name and number. And I've been told by people who have experience in booking gigs and playing clubs that this is, may take a week or two. You know, they take your number, they may not call you. And so call back after a period of time. So I took that first week, and within a week or 5 days, I wrote a song about the particular shop. Well, that exhausted me because I really jammed it in. And for 5 days, I got it, and it was a week. By within 10 days, I had a recording at my last Wednesday. I had a recording a rough recording. I finished up the song, essentially. And this week, I did a more polished copy of the song. I refined a few of the lyrics, and that's done. Well, in the meantime, I'm also regurgitating. I'm meeting with amateur musicians and on practice jams, like I did Saturday. I'm also jamming, relearning all these songs I've written. I've written probably 50 songs. I don't remember them. And so I'm starting to get my repertoire up because now I'm in a position, I want to be in a position to call her. And so I finished the product so I can send that to her. Because when I call her and ask about the gig, that's when I'm going to hit her with, oh, by the way, I wrote a song about your what your shop does and a promotion for your shop. Because apparently the speakers go over the square into the street. So it's a way to greet people, and it's about the shop, about what they're doing, how nice it is. And then each nonprofit, it could be different nonprofits, like this time it was related to the brain injury. It was about the Brain Injury Resource Foundation by Agate, Georgia. And they did this to raise funds, and that's why I attended. So next time it might be the Heart Association. So I have two verses and one verse. The third verse is a couple of placeholder lines introducing it, and then you introduce the nonprofit, so I can always change it. So I'm going to do that to impress her in case she's on the fence, because I do have a pretty good song. I played it for my amateur group. I've been sending it to people. It's, and now that I've cut, finished, it's pretty good. And I'm proud that I was able to knock this off that quick about a subject I didn't know. It's like a part of the creative growth. Anyway, but so when I speak to you tonight, because of all this, I'm exhausted. And I'm glad that I'm in this state, because as I also go through this subject matters about experiences I have with this, remember, we're going back to the broken switch. Well, that broken switch doesn't work either when you're annoyed or angry, like the incident with my cousin back in last year. Of frustration because of an aunt that might have been ill, and I'm thinking I'm venting to someone, and it comes off like I'm a bloody lunatic, like a psychopathic nutcase, screaming and ranting. And, it gets so, it's like something out of a horror movie, like you would hear the voice come out of it, right? And I've seen this in other brain injury people, where the extremity of the emotional release is volcanic. Okay? I know it. I don't even have to be told. I know how bad it is. I've seen it and in other people, and I know. And just all of a sudden, a blasting lunatic. I've seen people do it in public forums and stuff like that, all sorts of ways. And when you're doing it with people you know, you want to make sure that the people you know are going to be your advocates, because when you do it in a public forum, you may need a family member to explain. You know, he's a brain injury. Like last time I did something like that was like 10 years ago when I was in my doctor's office, my urologist, having my prostate, you know, they take samples of your prostate. I went kazoo in that office. I went off edge and thought, you know, and this can happen not just in these things where you just get pissed. Like I said, these kind of things happened, or not pissed, but frustrated, and you're fire, and the only reaction people can have, especially when they don't understand, is how horrible it is. So it's not surprising they come to that conclusion. And they'll come up with all sorts of reasons, and I know the real reason. Anyway, and I know what the actual intent is. It's like you're thinking you're speaking at this level when really it's at 100 times the volume or emotion, so it sounds far more sharp. And this happens, this broken switch, is not just in those areas. It's also in other all the other places in your life. That's why when I was first injured, and why I'm glad I'm speaking to you now in a fatigued state, because before I picked up this phone, the fatigue has got me so depressed, and all, I mean, literally to the point where now the volume switch is turned on negatively in energy level. And I'm literally feel like all the little things are coming at me so fast, like small incidences or something someone said on the tennis court are now raised to an extreme when they're really not. And it almost gets so bad that you hear when I've been to family gatherings or other places and I lay in bed, I can almost hear all the comments people make pulling at me like little pin cushions as I get inundated with those things in my head of impulses coming at me. A cousin saying this, this one saying that, someone on the tennis court saying something. And it starts to roll in my head because I'm in a negative state and the emotions are coming out. And the volume is now on the negative. And it brings you the impulses of what's normal fatigue becomes extreme. And you're at a point where the only thing you can do is lay in bed and just peace. You're so out of it. You're worn out. And like I said, as I'm dating, and then remember, now that I'm fatigued, I really, when this happens to me, I know it's time for me to remove myself from the world, make no decisions. It's why I did not make my presentation to the wine shop that offered me the job today, because I'm not up for it. It's the same way when I begin the dating process. If I'm not in the proper mood, I don't do it because I'm not ready for it. It's like family gatherings when I used to have them. We haven't had them in a long time. I told them over many years. I get so fatigued after a certain period of time. I'm not there anymore. And it takes me a family gathering of, say, could be 15, 20 people, typical. Not bad kids and stuff running around who are self-contained and into their own little thing. But you're interacting with all the people. Well, that much stimulation to this day, by a certain time, I'm tuning out and I'm starting to wear out. And I'm starting to do like I do now, where what happens is it used to take me 3 days to recover from it. I'd be in bed from the mental fatigue. Back when I first was brain injury, there was a time it was so pronounced, I could read a couple of paragraphs in an email and get tired. And so now that I'm talking to you now, it's a good thing, because if I show signs of wear, and I will,
and I'll explain the emotions. And certainly after this, I'm going to rest. And I still have loads of songs I have to practice because I have to get at least 15 or 20 songs. And I probably have to relearn. Probably I already have about 3 or 4. I got to relearn another 5 or 6 of my own songs, redo some cover songs to get to about 14. Then I got to figure out how I'm going to be able to play them over 2 hours, which will be tough. But I have to get that done. And now I'm ready to get myself rested enough and in my normal, easygoing, light way, and I can approach this woman. I don't want to approach her where I'm this off, because something I might not react correctly. Same way when I'm going on a date, I prepare. If I'm this exhausted, I'm not in the mood. And so as I explain this switch, and I use that example of my cousin and me just venting at the frustration is really all I was intending. But remember, she can't perceive that. All she knows is she's got a screaming lunatic on the phone, yelling and screaming, which she's not used to. And so this is the key about that broken switch, or maybe more than one broken switch, but we'll just use one as an example, is that it relates into other areas of your life. For instance, the emotion of pursuing or going out on a date, I'll have a much more intense reaction in my head. Now, since I developed coping strategies, what happens, I usually contain them. And the best way to describe this is if something that happened currently in the news, which was that submarine that imploded in the ocean about a month ago or so, where they went down on this trip to go see, I think it was called I don't remember, but I know would go down to see the Titanic, this submersible submarine. And they built it out of certain material that might not have been the best thing. But needless to say, let's just say it's a sphere that could go down and handle pressures of, you know, whatever it is, you know, 1,600,000 square foot down at the Titanic. You know, it'll crush submarines. I mean, just, you know, it's like, forget it, the pressure is so great. Anyway, and it imploded because what happened? Well, that's essentially what we do with our issues in the TBI world. When I first was injured, I had no control over these things at all. They would just happen. I went into rages or did this in public places numerous times in front of police. I was lucky that I was in a small town in Georgia, and the Roswell police tend to be very kind of community friendly. And they knew me because they picked me up on the road when I fell off the bike. So I was known through the police department because my bike was still there. And the fire department and the emergency service. And so the police, in Roswell police, they intended to get to know you. They knew. They even took me home a few times. They knew me. So when I would go flying off the handle, one time I went because they disconnected my phone some way, and I'm smashing a public phone in a shopping center, more like a shopping strip mall. And then Blady called the police, and a cop came, and he looked at me, and he says, you know, if it wasn't my lunch hour, I would take you in. As I was smashing the phone, he came up behind me. He says, have you had enough? He sees me going there just like they said, and they looked at me, and he realized. He said, where you live? I told him. I said, are you that guy that had the bike injury and the brain injury about 9 months ago? Yeah, that's me. He says, I get it. He says, get in the car. Let me get you out of here. Can you get someone to take you to the car? Or let me drive you. Make sure to follow me home. Like, get out of here. He knew I had a brain injury, and he let it slide. That happened 2 or 3 times. And, you're raising too much of a ruckus. You need to just go home and do this, something like that. Anyway, so I was treated quite kindly because of that. And so these, I was fortunate, and because it was at that point in place and time, they were very, and they knew where I lived because they had policemen living on the complex. So they ended up taking me a couple of times, took me home, and I let out a friend, you know, go out and get the car, and I just wanted to isolate. And they knew I lost consciousness in the hospital and stuff that was laying on my trail. Anyway, so what those things can happen, and in the outside, and it's uncontrollable at that point. I was probably a few years. When I got with the neuropsychologist, and she called it, a governor is out, like you have a car that has a governor to steer. Well, in my case, the governor's been wiped out or is corroded, like the switch on the stereo is not working. You know, normally it just goes up at the right level, whatever decibels you want it at, whatever volume. But sometimes when they go, you can't control it, and even on the push-button ones. And so what you learn, we go back to the submarine, what I have learned is I isolate the feelings and stick it in the submarine so that I don't do those things. I don't react to them. And most of the time I can do that. That's how I go on dates. I don't always pay attention. I've learned not to pay attention, be aware of these emotions and contain them so that I don't react and touch, so that the switch is contained, so that you're not going volume. And I practice it. And I practice speaking at a softer level. And I practice not letting that, containing that, those feelings. But like the submarine, occasionally that barrier breaks, no matter how many times you can correct it or improve it. And this is where, that's one thing when you're frustrated or you maybe are pissed off and you go canoodle on something that should be what would normally be a frustration statement of anybody. Anyone can get frustrated. But with us, because the switch is boom, it goes to a higher level. Well, it goes to other human emotions like love, like sadness, like rejection, like someone being competitive on a tennis court. And as a normal mind, because we have natural submarines in our switches, we keep it at a calibrated level so you don't go off the scale either way. So that when you have all impulses at a family gathering of 20 people or something else like that, a party, you don't freak out. The volume of impulses are not going to affect you so badly. When you're a person with the switch off, they come at you in rapid succession, like a machine gun. They keep popping at you. And so all of these emotions that are our governor or our transmission, that control how the car functions, right? And controls the engine, the gas pedal. It's all out of skew. All of these things, the brakes, everything. Use a car as an analogy, because there's many things. It's not just one. It could be happiness. And, you know, you meet a woman, for instance. The intensity when you're attracted can be extreme. See, but you don't want to come off like that to someone you meet. You'll scare them off. You have to be more cool about it. Last thing someone wants is someone who's slobbering, or it's uncontrollable, so it gets very intense. The same way when you feel sad about someone, or someone tells you no, in my case, I have to be aware. Normally, I could take it or leave it when I was of normal mind. And I'm even getting like that now because I've learned to isolate the feelings, because I've had a few times in the starting to dating process where things don't work out. You meet someone, they don't meet, they see somebody else. You know, it's typical. You know, I've had other family members or people I know who have disasters. I haven't had any disasters. I go through the normal comp, normal procedure. It's also those intensity of feelings have to be controlled, because as you're calling someone to pursue them, remember, they're checking you out to see if you're okay. That's the whole process, like you're checking them out. Well, I have to keep this, you know, I can't wear a sign on my chest saying, excuse me, if I start screaming, or I get too excited, or if I look like I'm ready to cry in the window, just to give you an idea about this, how it works in reverse. I have a friend that's very functional. Some people, I've seen this in TBIs. No, another person that I am not personally involved with, but I saw this in a TBI person. They're sitting at another table, and he's normally talking. And guess what happens? He all of a sudden goes into a crying fit over nothing. And because that volume is now on the negative, literally, in the middle of the meal, he's sitting there, and he starts bawling like a baby, uncontrollably. And then within 30 seconds after he starts, for about 30 seconds, about 10, 15 seconds, he does that. Guess what happens? Then it stops like nothing happened. That's what I mean. So when you're dating, guess what? I don't do that. I've never particularly done that. I sometimes have had dark faces because of a particular mood, or if I start to feel, if you start to perceive things in a paranoid way, I'll give you an example about this. There's just a light example of how when the governor goes where that volume switch is not functioning correctly. You can perceive things as they're not. So you always have to, that's why you're always putting these things in that submarine, because you don't want to react to them. That's the only solution I can come up with, because you can't just turn them off. And sometimes by doing that, you dissipate it and you give yourself enough time to be able to go through the intellectual process of unwinding it. And in our case, it just takes so long. A regular person never would. I'll give you an example. I had one of my cousins had a relationship at one time. I haven't spoken to her in a long time, so I don't know now, or email. Actually, we did it in an email. And there was a time we have a very joking banter, like I would have with friends. I have a friend in Texas like that. You know, sometimes a way that you engage with someone that you like and are comfortable with is by teasing them, by giving them a hard time, busting their chops, as they say. And during a time, she was probably writing some sarcastic thing to me about whatever. You know, you're like, oh, what a rotten human being. Well, guess what? And I actually at the time told her, just as an example, I remember, because what happened is I was in that mood where I perceived things negatively. Remember, this is with some close family member. Well, the same things happen with people on the dead, like now, because I'm fatigued and tired. I'm thinking a few things that were said on the tennis court yesterday is negative when it really was not. They were being quite friendly and just told me this or that, and it was very fine. But my perceptions, well, if you're going into new intimate social engagement with women, they could tease you. Well, in this particular case, to make it clear so you understand how this governor, it's not just venting or exasperation or anger or all these regular emotions you could express at a modulated level, not the volume I do, like it's something out of a blood-curdling battle, like a soldier going to war. That's how extreme it is. It looks like something that you'd see a horror movie, like the Wolfman turns into, like a lunatic, like we're fighting a blood debt. That's how bad it is. What it really is supposed to be, way down here. Well, when you go to these situations and you isolate them, and in this particular case, when I was bantering back and forth, it's a perfect example. It's part of the relationship. But yet, when I'm in that mode, I lose my normal easygoingness, and all of a sudden that governor is not working right, or that switch is in that negative volume mode where the whatever chemicals are not functioning correctly, and I perceive it seriously. And it's no way possible at the time it would have been serious in that person's head. And it's part of the relationship going back decades. But I perceived it. I knew enough at the time not to react to it. I used to just react to it. And I isolated it. But I save it because I found that as a profound example of how that's in many ways. Well, now to bring us back into the present, that's one cousin years ago over a relationship. It's on an email. It can be avoided. It can be analyzed. Well, as I'm going into the social setting of playing music in public, have dated a number of different women, I'm in the engagement process in current time of having to navigate these things. And I do my best to prepare for dates when I'm rested. I'm feeling good. And I learned to put it in that submarine and put it in that little submarine. Now, remember, that submarine of those emotions can occasionally still pop. It's happened in that one instance, but occasionally in everyday life. Now, the incidents of like blowing off things like a steam engine happens rarely with me. Maybe I've calculated over the last 12 years, it's happened maybe twice. In the last 12 years, it's happened three times or something like that. So every 3, 4 years, 5 years, that's happened where I've went off track in different ways, where I blew up and sounded, I was frustrated and I sounded off, or I said, you know, went off on somebody on the internet and got a little cheesy and argumentative, you know, kind of, or in my doctor's office with that urologist when I had that in 2000, I guess it was 2014, I don't remember. But anyway, just three instances, really. Now, these other instances of emotions happen far frequently as well. They're just not as obvious. Because nobody, except for the fact that they may see a very dark look on my face. And remember, I'm trying to isolate these things while I'm dating a woman and being lighthearted. And I'm not an unfriendly or uncharming person. And generally, I'm optimistic and friendly, and that's my normal pace of personality. I think even most of the people I know would say that. And it also goes into hyperverbality. You tend to talk on, sometimes you get hyperverbal. It's another symptom. Where you don't, you filibuster people. Just blow them away. It happens to me and my friend. Well, I have a friend and we both do it to each other. But anyway, we're learning to get back. But all of these things I have to control. And so, and the extremes in the emotions can be, you know, interesting. There was one woman I tried to date who I thought was wonderful. I even put her name in a song because we showed it. And she ended up having to move away. And this is recent. Dated her, and then there was another woman I dated not just a month ago who I decided not to date because, funny, and I handled that one with cool. At first I was offended, I was going to say nothing, but I didn't bite into it. She only liked heavy metal music. She was from a very exotic country, educated. She was very attractive, from Colombia, and not only was she only liking heavy metal music, I probably could have dealt with it, but I met her and I told her I'd teach her tennis, so I did meet her to teach her tennis, And she was letting me know, you know, I'll be available for a week afterwards, you know. So I could have taken it to a date. She wanted to share the heavy metal music with me, which I was ready to receive. But then she told me one thing. I told her I'd send her some stuff, and, well, she didn't want to hear my music. She's so exclusively into heavy metal. She has no interest in the kind of music I write and play. And instead of getting upset, I just decided at that point, that's it. And I knew her. I had told a friend of hers who I knew, one of the organizers of the meetup group where I asked her out and met her. And he knew I'd met her. He was there when I took her on tour to tennis, which I did. I still do. She told me once when I was on the phone with her. And then when I toured to tennis, she said it again. And when I was exchanging numbers, she says, oh, don't send me no music. I don't like it, only if it's heavy metal. So once I heard that, I'm out of there. I can't. I didn't want to pursue a woman that doesn't like, you know, part of my dating routine is I may have the women come by to see me play, especially if I'm earning a living. If I nail this job, which I'm really going to put a push for. And so I handle that one good. I've been handling the emotions good. And you have to do that. It's not, you know, I would love to have easily talked about. And I did find I have to calibrate the attraction part as well. Because that can go hyperspeed. Just like the volume if you're venting or the volume if you're being verbal can be set askew. Well, or the negatives can be highly intense. The attraction sometimes is, and you can't show it that much. Because if you show too much, you'll look like a crazy person. But the intensity is there. I've discovered this because, you know, there's all of these women that I've been around, at least there was one. Sometimes you have a more slower burn, and it's not a problem. But like the one person that heard me sing at this Anchor Bar, and as a matter of fact, some of the people, other waitresses that work with her, actually are going to come see me play. I still go there. She moved away. But at one time, we were engaging with each other, and I thought she was so, and it was not like a lustful engaging. It was partly that she was attractive, and I don't think I'm ugly. But it was also we just showed a caring attitude towards each other, which was very intoxicating. I think it was reciprocal. We didn't hammer each other. I was going to ask her out, so by the time I had a chance to, she left. But I did understand how when I started to get triggered in that, how intense it could be. And you have to be careful. And I had it pretty isolated. I think I would have been cool enough to ask her out. And now that I play music, and I just don't play if I get this job or not, I play in other clubs. And I'm good enough now, like I got the job when I play my songs. Apparently, I'm getting enough of reception when I play certain songs that I could probably invite someone to go see me play, which is a nice little way to get someone to come out with you and impress them at the same time. Anyway, but you wonder why I rejected the girl, that exclusive woman who exclusively just listens to modern heavy metal music, which some of it I like, just she wouldn't want to hear any of mine. I can't do it. It's too much a part of my life. And so, but this is what I mean, and that's why I call this the broken volume switch. And the best solution I have come up with, and by the way, to make a bigger note or a larger issue on this, it is so intense and uncontrollable, both these negative feelings. Like now, because I'm fatigued, I'm totally a wreck, and I'm not really able to deal with people. I did enough just to go out to get some bread to eat something. Because I played tennis and I needed to eat. And tennis does it to me because it drains me, in some cases with the heat physically. But in this case, it also drains you mentally. It burns you out. It does it to professionals when they play big. And I've been playing sometimes 3 hours in this heat. And I even talked to my doctor because I saw him today for a blood check. And he even admitted, yes, the next day. But in my case, the negative feelings can be so bad. In my case, I have to play testimonial to this because I mentioned my intellectualizing. I practice rational emotive therapy, so I always go through the ABCs, and I added something to that, you know, because Albert Ellis, I'll one day do a show on his book just to explain how I use that as my coping mechanism, coping strategies, and building up a little bit of a chicken wire around these faulty switches or volume switch to control, create in coping strategies that which has been damaged by getting hit in the head and trying to control it. It's sort of like doing a Rube Goldberg on the switch, putting a little putty there, maybe a little, you know, put a tomato on top of it so it stays in gear or whatever. And what? And I call it, and he practices the ABCs, and I'll define, I'll specifically get, I think it's acceptance, behavior, and then consequences. But I added something to it, which is an important recipe for me and has been since my beginning of my recovery. I'm pretty good at this, and sometimes. But there have been many times when they've overwhelmed me, and I've become literally non-functioning. And you're talking about someone who, if anyone saw, other than my sloppy apartment, would understand that I'm actually a very high-functioning person. As a matter of fact, my creativity is extreme. I mean, I'm at a point where I've gotten so good that I'm already forming the impression people have, musicians that I'm now playing in front of, are just sticking their tongues out. The amateur musicians were blown away that or anybody I spoke to, that I actually wrote a competent song about the wine shop that I may get hired. And I did a good job. I'm a damn good songwriter. And getting better at the singing and the playing. And this is after about 5-6 years or so. And that's a bit of an accomplishment. This is all post-injury. I did have an ear operation. That helped. Because once I cleared and got hearing in that ear, it gave me more ability to calibrate my voice and understand melodies anyway, I think. Anyway, but so I function extremely well. And so anyone would tell you that, and there's other aspects of my life which I've alluded to, the way I'm setting up my financial situation is superb. I'm handling it. The way I'm going to structure ideas about a trust. I mean, I tend to knock problems off very easily. Most people get a will drawn up by an attorney. I figured out how to do it myself. And now I'm going to put up, at some point when I sell my investments, I'm going to set up trust and long range and set myself up so that I actually likely will have a considerable estate and be comfortable. So that's part of it. But that takes all, and finding the ways to make the money also takes a bit of sense to do. It isn't just by accident. I worked at this. And my knowledge on the particular areas of it is so extreme, it's almost like I have a PhD in it. And the same thing with the songwriting. Now, so I'm highly functional, and I'm highly functional about setting up. And one day when I go with the book, I'll go into a more clinical, in other words, a better explanation on how I do it. I'm going to give you a general idea now, but maybe we'll have one program where what I do is come up with how I create these little submarines for each of these emotions or that submarine, and what's the process in terms of RET I use. But there's one thing I must mention, and I do not want to neglect this because I'm using it even now. Matter of fact, before I got on the air, I was actually laying here exhausted, not able to really think, knowing I could not call a woman now. I'm putting it off until I'm in a better strength of mind, because I know when I isolate myself in this mood, I'm not all there. Matter of fact, when I went on the tennis court yesterday, I couldn't even focus on the tennis game. I was losing balls and not reacting because I was so fatigued from all the songs I'm practicing and writing the song on a jam up. You know, I'm trying to redo songs that I wrote 2 years ago, or in some cases 4 years ago, and I'm over there trying to formulate the songs I'm going to use, and I'm going to have to relearn them. Now, they do come back to you. That's what I was relieved of, actually, but still, it's a tremendous amount of work, and I got to get these operational, and 7 to 8 of my own songs, and then, you know, and then some of these covers, I want to have at least 15 songs anyway. And my bass player will have the rest of them. But anyway, so these are all efforts, and I do the coping strategy. But so, and our Albert Ellis came up with rational emotive therapy. He's the creator of our EBT, or rational behavioral therapy. I guess that's what they call it now. It used to be called RET. He changed it, but he's the one that created this. And he comes up with the thing where you can simplify it in the ABC. So I use that as a way to process these eroded emotions, I will call them, because they're volumes that are not correct. They're supposed to be at one level. And instead, it's 20 decibels higher. It's supposed to not be negative 20 decibels if it's really a down emotion. And that down emotion is actually the misfiring of the chemicals in your brain. So you're trying to cover for that. And you're isolating it using your intelligence, which I have, and awareness of it, that I'm aware that these impulses are not correct. It's happening to me. But like the example of my cousin, Grinja